That's right. You are tuned in to Hour 2, or what we'd like to call the after party of Once Upon a Time Radio. It's a live interactive show where you, your voicemails, and emails are all part of the show. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the hit ABC drama Once Upon a Time. And you can be part of the show in a number of ways. Leave us a voicemail at area code 657-333-0626. Our main website address is onceuponatimepodcast.com. We're on Facebook. Check us out at facebook.com/OUAT podcast. Our Twitter name is OUAT podcast. The email address that you can use, send us a message anytime, is at feedback@onceuponatimepodcast.com. Your hosts are Jeff and Colleen Roney from Orange County, California. Thank you so much for listening, connecting, and interacting with us. Now, on with the show.
Okay, we're going to start hour two.
Yep.
The wild after party hour. As wild as old people can get. Yeah. Talking about a television show. So, thanks again for joining us, and we're going to jump back in to these awesome voicemails, and then we're going to get some emails.
Take one shoe off, please.
Take one shoe off, please. That's as wild as we get. So, I may even drink some caffeine. I don't know. I don't know how crazy I'm going to get. So, here is the next voicemail.
Hey, Jeff and Colleen, this is Nathan. I hope you guys are feeling a little better, and sorry for the lack of theories from me. I got busy. So, anyways, I caught Sunday night's episode, and I was very impressed with it. I have a theory on the stuff like Red's cloak and everything. For all the real magical stuff, you know, like Red's cloak or like the teacup and whatnot. I think they could be in either Regina's vault or in the very back of Mr. Gold's shop, where he got the Dementor creatures pendant and the wraith. So I think those kinds of stuff would be placed in an area that Mr. Gold, before the curse was broken, marked off to customers and everything. So, and again, I think...
Oh, I think he's talking about the magical things, because a lot of the things he has were really not magical. They're mementos, and they mean something.
Right.
The only thing maybe that was magical is the windmill that got David to remember his other life. But I hear what you're saying, Mason, about that.
More memento than okay. Magical.
All right.
Ruby's cloak ended up in the trunk, so we don't know where that was before. So we don't know how Spencer got it.
I think what Mason is saying is maybe there was a place where these magical things were held in Mr. Gold's shop, in that place where the Wraith medallion was, amulet, whatever it was. So, I mean, that's what Mason's saying. So.
Gotcha. And okay, I'm with you on that. What I was going to say is they weren't magical until magic came back.
True.
They were just objects until then. But he may have stored certain things back there, because once magic came back, they would have a lot more value and power.
And we don't know what she traded for that. It seems like Mr. Gold is getting nicer these days, you know, and nothing wrong with that. But it's just it is really different getting used to a nice Regina and a nice Gold, because we're so used to season one.
But I like that.
I do. I'm just saying, you know, it's like, you know, when you're used to someone for lunch, maybe smoking or something. They you're used to that as part of their life, and then they stop.
That's true.
And then you're kind of just you're like, wait a minute, we should have a anyway. So keep going, Mason. Sorry.
King George did get Red's Club from either Mr. Gold or possibly he might have stolen it from Granny's. Who knows? But I do like to think.
I an interesting little thing just to add to that is maybe he had or found out about Regina's keys.
Who, Spencer?
Yes. Because remember, the huntsman, the key that he used was one of those skeleton keys. So I'm thinking that even back in fairy tale land, those keys that opened everything were that you knew that if you had that set of keys, you can get into anywhere.
Yeah.
And maybe he found out about it, you know, and just another side. Sorry, it's taking so long, Mason, but another side note is George is kind of taking, Regina's place as the baddest guy or baddest person in Storybrooke. I mean, he is really, you know, him, Cora.
Go.
No, him, Cora, and Hook. If Hook is still bad, that's going to be some sparks flying. So, you know, anyway.
I kind of think Hook's going to be mid-ground. Hook could go either way easy. Cora and Spencer will not be easily dragged to the good side for sure.
No. But
I think Hook could be, and I am like, King George needs to go.
Well, King George and Cora may go out on a little date. You know, they may end up together. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you know, and if both of them want power, that could be an epic battle.
There you go.
And by the way, George won't survive it, so because he has no magic. So anyway.
Sorry, Mason. There you go.
That maybe everybody's getting their magical items back from Mr. Gold. And I do find it a little suspicious that Mr. Gold wouldn't charge Henry for anything, but who knows, he might turn on Henry. But I just thought it was great. It was a good character development that he wasn't so evil, and I think it probably would have been a little better if Belle was there to actually see that there is good in Rumpel. But then again, though, it probably would have still affected the relationship. Anyways, those are my theories. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks so much, Mason. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I think Belle already knows that he has that capability because she sees beyond the, you know, what he, you know, portrays as being this evil character because he's really just insecure. So I think she knows it's there. I think it would have actually been good for her to see that, but you know what? I'm pretty sure somehow that it'll get back to her that he did that.
It's you know, it's interesting. You know, people sometimes have this. They say, you know, I have this sixth sense or gift, or it's because I'm Irish, or it's because I'm whatever, and then they can look at somebody and kind of tell, you know, who they really are, or whatever. And so it was interesting that. That Belle in that moment, she kind of surveyed that situation when Billy was talking to Ruby and just kind of stepped in and gave her the out. And, you know, so she goes, no, I can sense a woman in trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was sad to see Billy go.
Yeah,
I really was. I thought there was more story there, but okay. I mean,
I know.
All right. So,
I know.
Poor Gus. Gus.
I felt bad too because Billy he seemed like he was a sweet guy. And poor Ruby, you know, the only reason she didn't go out with him is because she was afraid of what he would find out about her because she couldn't, you know, didn't feel like she could control her wolf.
Yeah.
And then she found out she could.
Yeah, I think she didn't want to go out with him because he wasn't a doctor.
No, she's not interested in
I know.
Frank.
I'm kidding. All right.
That's what I'm calling Vic. Him from now on. Nah, Frank.
Victor. All right. Anyway. So here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Jeff and Colleen. This is Dave from Michigan. I'm calling with a handful of theories that I got from watching the show a couple of times this week. The first one that I came up with was that Ruby's dad was a hunter, and her mom killed him, and Granny stole Ruby away because she realized that her mom became had become the wolf completely, and she did not want that for her granddaughter. I'm hoping that they show all this in an origin story for Granny, because Beverly Elliott deserves her own episode.
True.
Yeah.
And I agree.
I think it's a great theory. It's a fantastic theory. It would make a lot of sense.
And it would
fit the story very nicely.
And I think, too, that, a hunter falling in love with someone that he did not know became a wolf, that's mm-hmm. really interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. Good thoughts.
And Beverly Elliott is a pretty good actress. I mean, she,
Oh, she totally is. I still think it's hilarious when they said, "Oh, what, you retained your wolf hearing?" Yeah, it's not all it's cracked up to be, especially when you run a hotel. I fell out of my chair both times I heard that. I thought that was hilarious.
See, I wonder.
Hilarious.
I wonder if some of these lines are written, or if some of these lines are like, hold on, Mr. Director, I have an idea. Once we get here, let me just try something. I wonder. Yeah. So.
I thought we heard somewhere that, and maybe because I've seen it so much in so many other interviews with all kinds of things, is I wonder if they are given any kind of, they run the lines the way they're supposed to, they run them again, and maybe they change something up, and then the writers like it better and say, go ahead and keep that. I know a lot of shows do that, is that with their stars, especially if they're really good, they'll allow them a little tiny bit of license with, improvisation. But anyway.
The only thing I can say is what I saw, for instance, just that scene where Josh belted Dr. Whale. they didn't do, I think they may have done that four times. Maybe four.
I counted a few
maybe
more
five.
Than. I was like thinking six or seven times I
okay.
saw.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, maybe it is. But it just didn't seem like it in an inordinate amount of times. So, anyway. Okay, here we go, Dave.
I'm late season two or the beginning of season three, I think. Another one I had is that the Queen of Hearts, we all know that's the title of the fall finale, the last episode in December. That we're going to get to see. I'm wondering if it's going to be a backstory for Aurora, if we're going to find out that the Queen of Hearts is her mom. I also heard another theory today that the Queen of Hearts could be Snow's mom. Because did they ever actually say she died, or that they lost her? So those are two different theories about who the Queen of Hearts could be.
I don't recall hearing anything about.
I can't recall that either. I'd have to go back and look at Fruit of the Poisonous Tree. Watch that episode, because that's when Leopold talks about his wife, and I don't recall her ever saying anything. She's always just said, I really wish I had more time with my mom, blah blah blah. So who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, anything is possible at this point in time.
Okay.
Nice and positive. It's not Cora. I think that it's become too obvious that people think it's Cora. They're not going to go that route. A couple of observations and questions I had was, where is the hat that Emma made? Why can't they use that? Another one was that...
That's a good question. Maybe it's still at Jefferson's house.
Right.
I mean,
does anybody even know that that hat even exists other than Jefferson, Regina, or Emma and Snow?
Right. And I think what would be interesting is, let's say there's, the scene is set up this way. They go to Jefferson's house and say, where's the hat that Emma made? Oh, here, let me show you. And then open a door and there's like 100 of the same kinds of hats, because remember, he was trying to make one.
The hats, yeah. So I don't
and know. Obviously, probably the same style, but it's like, you know, well, here. So it's almost like, you know, the cup, the chalice, you know, you have to pick the right one, and it only works once or something like that. But anyway.
Emma actually finish a hat, though?
I believe so. I have to watch that episode again. But yeah, I do remember her working on a hat and setting it down, but it didn't work. And I think that's what he said. He said, it's not magic. It's like, well, look, you know.
I don't know. I'd have to watch that. I haven't watched that episode since like the week it aired, so I would like to go back and watch that again, I think.
Yep. We got a little time this week, so. Okay.
Yeah, sort of.
When Granny was talking about having wolf hearing is not always as cracked up to be when you run a bed and breakfast, I think that was actually a backdoor way to explain why when Ruby broke out of the freezer, she didn't hear it and immediately go check to figure out what it was, because she was in the B&B and all those people in the B&B were talking or walking or doing stuff that she could hear.
That's a good point.
Who's at the B&B though? Who's
Granny.
Staying there? No. Who's staying there?
Well,
is anybody staying there? Because August was the only one that was there, and Emma that we saw, didn't she? I mean, when she
I know.
Gave her the hotel key at the beginning of the whole series, she said, "You're the first guest, first visitor, like ever." So who's staying at the
Little Mermaid and?
I'm just asking. There may be people staying there. Maybe they had to stay, but.
Three Bears, Goldilocks, they're all there.
I think it's funny that she would say that, because how would she know who's been staying there?
Sure.
Well, oh, wait. Okay. Oh, no, wait. No, because you know what? Didn't one of those rooms, wasn't it one of her rooms, the room where Regina and Graham would have their Saturday council meeting?
Right.
That's what I'm sure she's referring to when she made that comment.
David stayed there once, too.
David
and then August stayed there.
In August. But,
and
but,
Emma stayed
and
there.
And Emma. Yeah. But beyond that, who else is staying there?
I'm telling you, I think it's...
I'm just saying.
So, but also, the one question that I had was, once she busted out of the door... I didn't see any other doors like removed off the hinges. And that's kind of what I was looking for. Like when Granny came in the next morning, the front door was fine and there was nothing thrown around. There was no and I even kind of looked around. I didn't look, I'm going to have to, you know, stop and get screenshots or whatever, but I didn't see the back door ripped off and thrown down. I saw the freezer door.
Right. Okay.
Torn off. But
so here's my theory. She was in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order for it to look like she killed Billy, she had to have gotten out, right?
Right.
My personal guess is that Spencer opened Granny's front door, was hiding in the side there. Ruby came busting.
Oh, okay.
Ruby came busting out.
Yep.
He closed her behind her.
Hmm. It's a good theory.
Just saying.
Wow. That's a good theory. Excellent.
Anyway.
All right. We will continue with Mr. Dave from Michigan.
And it overrode the diner, which was around the corner from the B&B. Another thing was when, I can't think of his name now. I want to call him Widmore. Spencer, King George, when he was talking to David, or Charming. It's kind of annoying to have to say all their names twice. He says he called him Shepherd. And for a split second, I was taken into loss because I thought he was talking about Jack Shepherd.
I didn't catch out to just now, but you're absolutely right. Yep.
You're nothing but a shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah. They
nice little lost Easter
they
egg.
Do love, yeah. They do love to kind of slide that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice that people that never watch Lost, it doesn't change anything. It's just
no, it doesn't. But it's for those of us that were losties. It's quite funny. And we didn't even mention this, but when Emma and Neil were on their little Bonnie and Clyde thief spree, there were Apollo bars.
Right. Yep. Yep.
Which is another lost reference.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, I try not to mention everything just because I just don't want people to get annoyed, but mm-hmm. all the Lost fans go, yeah, I know. I know it's Apollo Bar, yeah. Okay, here we go.
And I knew that was not just a throwaway line. I'm guessing that was a subtle throw to the Lost fans. Then the last thing was about when it looked like Ruby and Charming were going to kiss.
Uh-oh. He got cut off.
Oh, no.
So, maybe. Maybe he agreed. I'm not exactly sure.
We watched that episode again, and I didn't see it again.
Okay.
Because she looks at him like a big brother. That's all that's ever happened. Snow is like her best friend. Snow's her family. She even said at the end of the episode, Snow's her family.
I know.
So she wouldn't do that to her family. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, too. Okay. All right. And then he could say, well, we weren't cursed. Okay. Here's the last voicemail.
I was Dave from Michigan again, finishing my last thought about the kiss, or the almost kiss, or at least it looked like an almost kiss between Charming and Ruby. And, you know, in the first reactions, or whatever we call it, podcast you guys did, you talked about how you thought that you thought you saw something there. And I was thinking about it, and I watched it a second time, and I realized it was something that they do all the time on soap operas, daytime soap operas, because I've watched it since I was three, which is kind of the reason I love this show. It's called chem testing, basically, where they take two characters who have always been acquaintances but never really had a huge relationship on the show, and they put them together to gauge how they react, if they have any chemistry, and what the fan reaction is to it. And I have a feeling from the outrage and outpouring from fans of even the hint of this that they're going to go ahead and make this nothing romantic, and they're going to turn it more into a Harry Potter, Hermione-type relationship where they're just, you know, good friends who can rely on each other. But I think that's why they did this in this episode, where they had it look like that maybe it was a possibility, because that's what they wanted to see, how the fans would react if there would be Ruby and Charming shippers out there who would be, I don't know, I don't even know what kind of a squish name you'd give those two. But so that's what I think that was about. So I was very excited to watch this. I can't wait to hear the podcast when you guys do it, because I'm looking forward to having something on Sunday when there's no Once Upon a Time to watch. So thanks, guys. We'll see you in a week or so.
Thanks, Dave. And we are here for you. And I think there's a lot of stuff, and especially hour one, but there's stuff yet to come. But
and by the way, the only name I could come up with for shipping those two, which I'm sorry, I struggle with the word shipping in the first place. Sorry, as a grammatic, I'm very grammarian. Anyway, bottom line is, my goodness.
Grammar.
The only thing I can think of for them would be charred. CHARRED. Charred, as in dead, as in no, it's not going to happen.
Oh, okay.
That's the only thing I can come up with.
Okay.
Because that would be ridiculous. That would be just okay, seriously? You pull them apart for 28 years, you put them together, and then you pull them apart again temporarily in Storybook before the curse, and then you put them back together again, and then you tear them apart again, and then you tear them apart even further by adding Ruby in the mix? No. No. And that would be really, really sad if they did. Really sad.
Now, see, okay, just a little glimpse into my psyche as a man.
Oh.
Wait, hold on. I don't think, wow, that's pretty bad. I don't think about the ramifications. I only looked at the screen and saw what I saw, and with what that they were almost doing. See, and that's the only reason why I even brought it up.
The funny thing is as a woman who typically looks for that kind of stuff, I didn't see it.
Okay. All right.
I'm just saying, I did not see it.
Okay.
Ruby and Charming are not having a thing. And there's not going to be a thing. She didn't almost kiss him. He definitely didn't almost kiss her. I think it's brotherly, sisterly, and that's the extent of it. That's as far as it goes.
And with that, we'll play this.
Okay, great.
And here are some great listener emails.
Delivered via carrier pigeon?
Yes. And some of them have more than just broken written on it.
Yeah. We apparently have gotten a few of them, even recently.
Yeah, in the last 10 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. So, this is from Cindy. And let's see. I think... Stop me if I read this before. I don't think I have. This is from Cindy. It says, Colleen, I love how miffed you are that Frankenstein has been included in Once Upon a Time. However, could he be, in the end, a hero? Consider that the sheriff's heart was in a vault, but the sheriff was still alive. If the other hearts belong to other Storybrooke residents, remember Rumpel said to Regina that when you have the heart, you control the being. Of all of Storybrooke is still under the control of the queen, since they still cannot leave without losing memory. Perhaps the only way to gain freedom from Regina and or Cora is to have your heart return to your body. Would your opinion of Frankenstein change? If he was the only doctor who knew how to replace enchanted hearts, Frankenstein.
I have to say, no, it wouldn't.
Okay.
Look, David Anders is awesome. Love him as an actor. I think he's fantastic. I even like the Dr. Well character on some level because he was kind of smarmy and sleazy. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, you couldn't really take him seriously. But the fact is, Frankenstein's not a fairy tale. It doesn't belong in the same genre. It's just, it's too much for my brain to handle. Okay. I just cannot, I can't wrap my head around it. I just can't. I'm good.
So it's kind of like, Thanksgiving. You talk about everything else, but the one thing, and then people kind of catch other people. No. Don't bring up politics. Don't say that. So
no, it's just one of those things. It's not that. It's that, look.
I know. I get it.
Anyway, bottom line is...
No, we've discussed it.
He's welcome to be a hero. They're welcome to make him a hero. It still won't change the fact that I don't like the fact that Frankenstein is part of this world.
Okay.
It doesn't belong.
All right.
It doesn't fit and it doesn't belong. That's my... I'm not going to change my mind on that. Sorry.
Yeah. I get it.
Yep.
Okay. So we will continue. Here's the next email. This is from Paige. Says, not Paige from Chicago. Different Paige. Hello, my name is Paige, and I listen to your podcast every week. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. I just got done listening to your First Thoughts podcast of Child of the Moon and wanted to make a couple of comments. I did enjoy the episode, especially the theme of who I am. However, I did feel the storyline with Red and her mother was a bit rushed.
Yeah, I'm kind of sure because it was a few hours or maybe days or something, but more likely a few hours. So yeah, I mean, it was a little rushed because we didn't know what the time frame was. We're assuming it was very short because Snow showed up not too long afterwards, I mean, it may have been a week, it may have been a few days. I just don't see it being much longer than that. And so yeah, it would have been really rushed. And the one thing I did kind of notice was it was kind of like, well, wait, she's just taking her word for it that she's her mother?
Yeah.
I mean, and she's, you know, the woman who raised her, Granny, who, again, based on, was it Dave's theory? That, you know, that the huntsman was her
father. He was a hunter.
Was her father, and her mother killed him.
Right.
And that Granny didn't want her daughter, her granddaughter, growing up in that. I mean, hello, that just totally makes a total lot of sense. So for her to just so quickly be mad at Granny for lying to her. It's like, well, wait.
Well, okay.
Where's your proof that she's your mother? You just have her word for it. I mean, I'm sure she was, but anyway.
Yeah. So let's talk about this a second. And this is one of the questions I asked Jane Espenson is, do you have the full scope of the season all lined out? And the reason I ask that question is I know there's certain arcs that they do. Mm-hmm. For instance, arc in season one was going to break the curse, right? That's the full arc of season one. Mm-hmm. Now, we didn't know that, but they did. And so that's how they wrote season one. But in answer to your question, Paige, is I think you're right, is it did seem rushed. Now, what would have been nice is if they would have done like they've done before, they'll pepper little scenes coming up to this big focused episode on a character. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice, I don't know which episode, some episode, where Ruby maybe would have had some time talking to somebody and saying, oh, and maybe picked up a brooch or something and saying, oh, what's that? Oh, my mother gave this to me. Something like that. And then tell a story. Well, she was dead. But it's like maybe I got it from whatever. Mm-hmm. So that we could have heard something. And then maybe, you know, she saw something that was very similar and say, that's just like what you gave me.
Right.
So that there it could have been a story. And then a connection, and then we would have kind of, I think, bought it easier. And that's all I'm saying. Look, I'm not a writer on the show. So.
And again, we don't know what the time frame was. We're assuming a day or two, maybe a week at the most.
Right.
Because again, Snow had to track her. How long did it take? But if it was tracking her footprints, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was snow outside. So, I mean, you know, there are places there were snow outside, right? So, I mean, it's just that whole, how long did it take? We don't know.
Like, it would have been nice to see them maybe do something the same. And then you could have said, wow, they are mother. You know what I mean?
Something like that would have
hinted at. We would have known. But you know what I mean? I don't know,
so. Right. Well, and the other thing would have been to have had some sort of somewhere in maybe one of the other episodes. I don't know how they could have thrown it in there, but maybe have something that we would have caught a glimpse of the mother, or we would have had a flashback and maybe seen just a shadowy figure. You know what I mean? Something, anything to kind of connect it. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really hear much about that. So
okay. So Paige continues. There wasn't a buy-in for me of the mother-daughter relationship. So one of the big overall themes of the show is the mother-child relationships. I felt that the relationship between Red and Anita was not developed enough. And I agree.
Yeah.
On the flip side, with Tallahassee, I did buy the whole relationship kind of building. But they had more time to do it.
Sure.
This was very, very, very fast.
And the funny thing is this episode, while it was a little bit more about the Red backstory, it really was the real end game here was Spencer and Charming.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what I felt like anyway.
Yep. All right. And I almost expected at the end of the episode for it to be revealed that Anita wasn't really her mother. That would have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can see where you're going, Paige, with that, because if you didn't buy their relationship, then at the end it would have kind of, well, it wasn't her mother anyway.
Exactly. And I kind of, honestly, I was expecting this to have something come up where it was, she's not really, or, you know, maybe some sort of thing where Quinn was her brother or, you know what I mean? Some crazy wackadoodle thing, but they didn't seem to, you know, come up with anything like that.
So it was almost kind of like the August Gold thing. The August Gold thing where you thought that he was Bay,
mm-hmm.
and then in the end he wasn't. So it's almost kind of like, okay, we're still looking then. Good. Okay.
Right.
At least we figured who he's not, right?
Right.
So, okay. So Paige continues. So I was just wondering about your thoughts on this. And we agree. I mean, there's only so much time in an episode, but we think there could have been little things before or certain little telling things throughout the episode that it kind of would been, and I could see where you came away with that. It's like, well, what if she's not the mother at all? and we were told that, or so. Yeah.
Right.
By the way, Jeff, I also thought for a split second that Charming and Ruby were going to kiss. So, okay, we have at least one person. So, all right.
Yep.
Thank you, Paige, so much. And okay, this is from Robert. And my first thoughts upon hearing King George's name in Storybrooke was of Edmund Spenser, the author of The Fairy Queen. Mm. The King-Queen connection seemed obvious to me. Did anyone make a connection to James Whale with the Doctor? Mr. Whale directed the Boris Karloff version of Frankenstein. He was portrayed by Sir Ian McKellen in the film Gods and Monsters. And I do want to see Gods and Monsters, by the way. That's the backstory of...
I think that's the one that. With Brendan Fraser. I think he's in that movie because I actually saw bits and pieces of it.
Okay.
It was kind of interesting, the bits and pieces I saw.
But anyway. Very good. Yeah, Spenser more than likely is that connection there. And yeah, the whale doctor connection was kind of obvious. To me, it was so obvious that I just went, it can't be. But that's in the end, that's what it was. Thank you, Robert, for that. Yeah. And I did want to interject something really quick before I forgot. I did get a chance to see the 1931, I think, version of The Wolfman over the last couple of days. And the tortured soul of Ruby, really, they kind of, I think that they pulled that idea from the Wolfman movie, because normally when we're used to heroes, right? When Spider-Man is bit by that spider, he uses that and is okay with it. But, you know, before there were these tortured souls, you know, the Wolfman, Lon Chaney Jr. was very tortured. And I'll have to watch it again, but I think that verse that she said, you know, once Quinn and her mother, I believe, was dead. She had that little, you know, long will you as the Wolfbane something. They said that kind of similar thing in the Wolfman movie, and I'm going to have to go back and watch
Wolfbane?
It. Was something that little run verse that she said.
Run in the... Light of the moon, pale light of the moon, or something like that.
There was a similar line in The Wolfman that they said at the death of certain things. And actually, it was interesting because Bela Lugosi was in the Wolfman movie. He played a gypsy. That was kind of interesting because we've seen Ed Wood and the whole Bela Lugosi at the end of his life. So, anyhow, but yeah, the Wolfman movie was very interesting. And then we saw Metropolis yesterday.
Yes.
So we've kind of been seeing old school, old black and white
silent
movies.
Well,
and
Metropolis is silent.
So one more little thing and we'll move on is there was a courtyard that Lon Chaney Jr., his character, was looking at through this monocle-less lens, see this woman in a window. And the courtyard was a courtyard of miracles that they used in Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm. And also, I think there's a church that was also used in the Hunchback also that was kind of reused for the Wolfman. Because they reuse stuff all the time. And,
oh, yeah.
But anyway, it was kind of nice to see old classic films. And it was really just especially Metropolis. That's a beautifully... quite an achievement for the 20s. So anyhow, this is from Cindy, this email here. Someone please tell me zombies only come out on the full moon nights. I'd love to see Red's wolf fight a zombie. I was intrigued by the theme of this episode, which I interpreted Ruby and Henry learning how they once have control over their fears. Very good. Yeah, and that's, I believe that is...
Yeah.
One of the themes. The only thing is I did mention zombies in the first thoughts because of the coming next in 2 weeks little thing at the end of the episode. But I seem to remember there was, and this may be a stretch, but do you remember when the fairies took their dust bombs and knocked out all the guards.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guards all got up.
They didn't kill them.
But I'm just saying.
I think it's different than, okay, than what we've got going on here.
But I'm just, because they looked different to me. They had blood on them, and it's not the normal heart pull out thing that we've seen before. The only other thing I've got is I seem to remember there was some kind of Disney something where it had this kind of dark army that looked like they were killed, and then all of a sudden the leader of the thing said, you know, rise, and they came back and kept fighting or something. Just something in the back of my mind kept kicking around, so I just figured I'd bring it up for whatever. So,
okay.
Anyhow, Cindy was talking about Ruby and Henry learning that they can control their fear.
Yes.
At will, using what they had once been afraid of. And in future episodes, it will be interesting to see how Red uses her new power to roam freely as a wolf at will, and how Henry will use his new power to enter his dream at will. And yeah, I think that is interesting. And I think there is something to be said. You know, it was, if you watch that section of the episode when she took off her cloak and dropped it, it was very, it was like, it was important. It was a huge step for her,
mm-hmm,
stepping away from fear and using this kind of, you know, cloak, amulet, something magical to keep her afraid, you know. And we talked about the house and all the locks, and just, she was living in fear, but now, you know, learning to control her wolfness, you know.
Right.
So, all right, I'll continue here with Cindy's email. As usual, new questions arose. Whose castle do the wolves live in? It's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not know.
Yeah.
Number two, how did King George get Red's cloak? You know, I think it's Regina's keys, but, you know, it could have been...
It was stolen,
right?
Most likely. We don't know by whom, whether it was Spencer himself or if he has any lackeys.
Yep.
And we don't know where he stole it from. But my guess is he pinched it from somewhere.
Well, the lackey is an interesting term, because maybe someone is a turncoat in Storybrooke,
mm-hmm,
and works for him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's possible.
Yep. So I continue. As Ruby states that she's never had it in Storybrooke. Ah, I forgot that line, but yeah, Ruby said she had it.
She never had it. So. Somebody did.
Okay.
Maybe Granny.
So then it goes back to what Mason said. Maybe it was in a gold shop.
Possibly.
In some type of a lockbox or something. All right. Number three, I thought it was interesting that after the dream, all of the dream catchers of the last episode, Gold has a whole dream catcher kit, which includes candles and potions.
Hmm.
Very interesting. I did see the candle the second time through in his bag.
Yeah, I did too.
Number four. So it's probably the combining of the two, the actual candle plus the dream catcher maybe does something. So it's kind of like the hat and the fairy dust is the complete package to do something, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Number four, if my theory is correct and August's box contains the typewriter, signifying the power of the written word or the power of suggestion, it really works well because all the writer had to do was say Billy was Gus, Cinderella's mouse, and instantly we all loved him. Hmm.
Yeah.
Very, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Because he could have been anybody. Hmm. Or maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was somebody else.
Well, I wouldn't put it past him to be Gus.
And maybe that's why she didn't want to go with him. Maybe she kind of knew something. That's interesting.
I really, truly got a sense for she was worried that he would find out who she was. And she was really, really worried about hurting him because of the fact that And by the way, that actually fits in really well because Spencer would have overheard her. That's why he picked Billy to kill. Because that's actually a perfect crime.
Yep.
It's a perfect crime to pin on her because at the happy hour, just because your name's in it doesn't mean you have to be there. That's what Grumpy said. I thought that was funny.
Right.
But the happy hour, Spencer was sitting there because he was waiting for Charming. And then he would have overheard the exchange and would have, you know, sensed Ruby's uncomfortable and then would have been able to quickly hatch the plan to kill Billy because he was just a little mouse.
Right. Here. Okay. Yeah. Here. I have a quick question for Sarah Harty, who is not in the chat room tonight.
I don't believe she is.
Is that parking area where Billy's tow truck was and where Charming and Ruby and Granny came up, was that the parking lot that was right in front of Pajo's?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because I was,
well,
I used Google Earth and I was looking around and I couldn't find it.
I believe that Larry could validate that it was, and it could also be validated by Ima because I believe she was there when they were filming that scene.
Oh, okay.
So it's the docks. It's not a parking lot.
Okay. Well, because, yeah. So anyway, I was just wondering where they filmed that.
That was what she just said in the chat room.
Okay. Number five, I go back to last week. Emma sitting in her car alone, thinking of Tallahassee. She says home. This week, David tells Henry we are bringing them home. Again, Wizard of Oz, boy.
Mm-hmm.
But Ruby refers to, and Ruby, it's another Oz thing. Uh-huh. They're just chock full of Oz, boy.
Uh-huh.
But Ruby refers to Fairytown Land as home. Where would each of them want to be if they could just go home? Yeah, and home is another one of those terms. You know, it's a loose, nebulous term. Where is home? Home is where the heart is. Home is where you are. Home is where you're, you know what I mean?
Where you hang your hat.
Right.
Home is,
yeah. So, yeah.
You can't go home.
You can't go home again, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and depending on, and I know this is totally random, but a really cute movie that I like is The Switch with Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman. And one of the statements that he makes at the end is, you know, he says, or Jeff Goldblum tells him, go home all, and he goes, they are my home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, you know, referring to Jennifer Aniston and the little boy. So people can be referred to as home.
Yeah.
And that's a very sweet line, by the way.
And, thank you again for the humor and the interesting debates on your podcast. we try to please. I'm glad I have 2 weeks to figure out how to gain power over my fear of zombies. I hate zombies in Once Upon a Time almost as much as I hated Frankenstein. But then again, Frankenstein's job might be to end up being to replace all those hearts of the rifle owners. I wonder if the zombies will still have their hearts intact. Or if Cora controls them. Creepy. I need power. So, and she makes a good point. I don't think they're zombies. I think that they are controlled by the person who has their hearts. And I think she makes a valid point, is once the hearts are returned, they won't be under control anymore. So
I really hope they're not true zombies, seriously.
I'm trying to give it a spin. Trying to spin it for you. I'm trying.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. This is the next voicemail from Hillary in Colorado. Hi, Jeff and Colleen. I've been really behind on your podcast. It's okay. It's a lot.
I know. It is a lot. To get caught up on.
But I am caught up with all the first thoughts now, but not on your live shows. I apologize if you've already discussed these things. First of all, was anyone else totally thinking Lost Boys with the Wolf Pack? Maybe.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an element of that.
They might as well have gotten Jamie Gertz to play Anita. LOL.
Jamie Gertz. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, she was on Lost Boys.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about
Oh, that's right. I thought, I thought she meant from
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan, but no, she meant the movie, The Lost Boys, with Kiefer Sutherland and all that. Wow. Yeah.
And what's his face?
Yep. The eyes and all that. Yep.
Uh-huh.
But nobody flew up to the ceiling. So,
no, they didn't.
And Corey Haim, or one of the Coreys. I can't remember.
Feldman, I believe.
Yeah. Anyway, the main thing I wanted to discuss, or hear you discuss, is that season two seems to be all about the bad guys. But we are finding out the bad guys aren't really bad, or at least we are getting a glimpse of why they are so tortured. It's quite intriguing. And yeah, it's to me, it's more of a flip side. We kind of already knew who the bad folks were, but now it's people that we didn't really expect that are now bad. And so. All right. Regina is redeeming herself, and we are seeing deeper into her backstory to see how she became the evil queen. Yep. And also, it's interesting to kind of see the cause and the effect now, how she became evil, and then we're seeing how she is becoming gooder. So that's what I...
Gooder?
See, okay, let me explain one more time. In a different way. My grandmother would create words. Now, these words would never end up in any kind of dictionary. My grandmother created the word tump, T-U-M-P, tump. It was a combination of toss and dump. And so she said, tump it in there. I didn't know what tump was. I thought she had a speech impediment for a bit. And then she goes, no, it's toss and dump. Just tump it in there. I go, okay. So it's almost DNA. I got it from my grandmother, and I create these words, and I don't say the right words sometimes.
Yes, yes.
Especially actors and movies and stuff. Captain Hook was a pirate in love. Yes. Frankenstein was only trying desperately to reunite with his brother. True.
Mm-hmm.
That was his goal.
Yep.
The giant was a very kind and reasonable beast who lost a battle. I love the twist. I love this twist. Thought it was brilliant. The dirt bag baby daddy to Henry was really, truly in love with Emma and did what was best for her. And there's a lot of this kind of stuff in Lost where people saw something, a character is with another character, and they see something happening or something happens, and then they're taken away from that person. And then the person kind of continues, and then you see, no, it wasn't as bad as what they thought.
Right.
They fixed it, or it wasn't what they assumed it was.
Right.
And so, you know, sometimes she was still, yeah.
Sometimes you have to see the whole picture to appreciate what you're seeing, because it's not always what you think.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's what's critical about this communication device with the fire in the room and the sleeping and all that kind of stuff. Because when you split up the group, which is what Lost did all the time, not everyone knew what was going on. And so one of the group had something happen, but they couldn't tell anybody else, or they, in the case of Lost, they would lie.
Right.
Or withhold information so that they could become more powerful, like Ben, all this kind of stuff. So, all right. The Big Bad Wolf is a frightened woman trying to come with terms with herself. That is true.
That's true.
Oh, and yes, it was a bit weird about Frankenstein too, but I really think he or his brother will turn out to be the Wizard of Oz. I agree with you.
Yep.
All the hints can't be an accident, and they know we're all searching for those clues. Anyway, thanks for the great work, and I will try to be caught up. And she sent a few photos of the hairstyle of one of the guards of Wizard of Oz. Looks sort of kind of like Dr. Victor Frankenstein. So I give that to you. Okay, this is Katie from Florida. Hi, Katie. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's try again. Hi, Jeff, Colleen, and Lady. Is Lady still sleeping?
She is.
All right. During the first thoughts, you were discussing whether or not David had been in jail. He has never been in the jail cell. Emma brought him in for questioning, but since there wasn't evidence of a crime yet, she couldn't hold him. Then Red found the box with the heart in it, and Mary Margaret was brought to jail. Thank you, Katie.
Yes, thank you.
For that. All right. This is from Manny. And so let's see here. We can open it up. Okay, so is it possible that Balefire is still 14 years old? I'm going to read this. Okay, as I understand it, the popular and most logical belief of what happened to Balefire is that he fell through time and landed in our world without magic in the year 1983, at the age of 14, making him 42 or 43 years old today. This is suggested by Rumple's ability to see the future, and up to the point of dropping the bottle of magic into the well, his only mistake. He was correct about everything. So we would have to assume that he was correct about the most important issue of all, time and place, our world, 1983. But thinking in terms of his selfishness and greed, coupled with his accuracy and sheer ability to formulate the dark curse to take place where and when he wanted it to, shouldn't we be assuming that Rumpelstiltskin would not have wanted to give up the 28 years he would lose with Balefire? Waiting for preliminary events to take place, such as Emma's growing to her 28th birthday, Henry's arrival, and finally breaking the dark curse, it occurred to me that I wouldn't. Given all the powers available to me, why would I? After centuries of planning and manipulating, why would I give up even 1 minute when I could be there when he drops out of the sky, or however he entered our world? In Season 1, Episode 8, Desperate Souls, it is shown to us that Rumpelstiltskin becomes the Dark One. On Balefire's 14th birthday, as Hordor and his men are there to pick up Balefire to take him off to war, In Season 2, Episode 4, The Crocodile, we learn that the Dark One is immortal, as he tells Mr. Smee in the bar scene. So the moment Rumpel becomes a Dark One, he stops aging and will remain that age until he begins to age once again, which would be the moment that Emma comes to Storybrooke and starts time. Not long after Rumpel becomes a Dark One, Balefire goes through the vortex at the time of the age of 14. So if Rumpel plans it correctly, he could actually be there when Bay falls into our world, theoretically, and both would be exactly the same age that they were when Rumpel let go of his hand. But unfortunately, the various maps Mr. Gold was packing to tell us to use tells us otherwise, but only tells us that he didn't know the exact location, the exact point of entry. It is very possible that Rumpelstiltskin discovered that Balefire dropped into our world not in 1983, but in 2011. And in not wanting to lose 28 years of Balefire's life, and with the powers and abilities at his disposal, he aims the Dark Curse at 1983, 28 years before Balefire's arrival. So all the preliminary events, Emma, Henry, and the breaking of the Dark Curse, have already taken place, and Gold Rumpel is free to go and seek his 14-year-old boy, Balefire, without missing one day of his life. It is possible that Balefire is still 14 and has just entered our world and is wandering the streets right now and has absolutely nothing to do with Emma, Henry, Neil, August, Jefferson, or anybody, because he has just arrived. And the rest of the people involved are just Rumpel's pawns and are simply a means to an end. As all in Rumpel's past have been, it would also fall into the line of the style of the writing thus far. Look at this hand while I do this with the other. So.
Well, here's my one question.
Okay.
I mean, anything is very possible, but here's one question.
Okay.
If, in fact, he orchestrated it, which he'd have to have had control over the bean, which I don't think he did, in order to drop him into time wherever he wanted to drop him in.
Right.
Why would he think that August is Balefire, even for a split second, if he thought he was still only 14?
Okay. Fair enough.
Other than that, it's a very, very well thought out and very well orchestrated, you know, plot theory. I just am curious if that's the case. He was either A, yanking our chain, or Balefire really is actually going to be 42, 43, whatever his age is.
The thing about Manny is when you start talking about time and once upon a time, Manny's the dude because he's anyway. So
that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he's wrong. Yeah. I'm just saying that's my only
question. That's a valid question.
That's my only question that would put a little bit of a wrinkle in this.
Yeah. Okay, this is Dan from Boston. Oops, almost forgot to mention to you my latest Star Wars parallels in Once Upon a Time. From the last week, the Dan called themselves the Wolf Pack on the TV show Star Wars The Clone Wars. I have not seen it. I have not seen this show. Mm. There's a special ops unit of the clone troopers called the Wolf Pack. Hey, I have kids and I have to keep up with what they watch. I understand. I get it. Two, speaking of troopers, don't Regina's Black Knights remind you of the Stormtroopers? You're able to outmaneuver them despite overwhelming odds, but they occasionally get one good shot off before they're defeated, a.k.a. shooting Charming's mom and Red's mom. Oh, both moms shot by the Knights of Regina, yet another reason why they don't like her very much. Yep. Logging on to chat now. See you soon, Dan from Boston. Thanks, Dan. Very good. Very good. Very good points indeed. All right. So we have one more.
You sure?
Yep. We have one more email. Did you notice the necklace that Mr. Gold gave Henry and Anita, and Anita's grave marker had the same symbol on it?
Who's this email from?
Attach that. Paige.
Okay.
From Chicago. And yes, that looks very, very, very similar to me. And I will post that on the blog post. So that's it. That is it. That is
Are
the
you
last.
Sure?
Yes.
Check again.
Okay. I don't have any more emails. That was the last one. Which one? Who is it from?
Dan is in the chat room, and he's saying that there was another one that was sent before that one.
Let me see here.
Apparently it was earlier this week.
Let's see here. No, I didn't get it. The last one was on Tallahassee.
Oh.
Nope. The last one I got was on November 7th.
Oh.
Let me check the other account. Sorry, gang. No. Nope. I didn't
get
the other one. Sorry.
We never got it. That sucks.
Okay. So, excellent theories.
Oh, he's saying it's that one, the Tallahassee one.
Okay. I thought I read that one. Okay.
No, I don't think he did. Anyway.
Yeah, I did. It was about the Rancor and the Red Room and yep, and Chewbacca
and
the crossbows.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, then that was on last week's live show.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Okay, so thanks everyone. Lots of cool thoughts, and you know, as you know, we all work together. We give it our shot to, you know, find all the little tidbits, but then, you know, everybody else works with us and we find out more. I mean, that was a cool email just right now, the page and the symbol. So thanks for every email and every voicemail. We appreciate it so much.
There's no live show next Saturday night.
No live show next
Saturday. Thanksgiving weekend.
Take the weekend off. Go spend time with your family, please. And be thankful for what...
Plus, there's no show tomorrow night, so enjoy a Sunday evening doing something else.
Yep. Or Saturday, you mean.
No, tomorrow night is Sunday.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow's Sunday. Yep. But it'd be the next...
I'm talking about tomorrow night, since there's no show.
Yes.
Enjoy something else other than what you would normally do, which would be to watch Once Upon a Time.
Correct.
And next Saturday night, go do something fun.
Yes. Yep. So thanks so much, everyone. I'm sending big love out to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for just coming together and chatting and emailing and calling in the voicemail line. We really appreciate it so much. And it's really cool, this little community.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a family.
Yep.
And so I send big love out to everybody. Have a great evening. Have a great tomorrow and a great week.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Who we are thankful for.
Oh, absolutely. Thankful for all of you guys. Mm-hmm. And so the next time you will hear us is the first thoughts for Into the Deep.
Yes.
Which is next Sunday.
Yes.
Next Sunday,
yes.
Yep.
Yeah, enjoy the Twilight Zone marathon on Thanksgiving Day. You might catch an episode that my grandfather was in. He was in two of them. I don't know if they almost always air To Serve Man, so he'll be in that one.
Yep.
He's the general, the
He's
colonel.
The general.
The colonel. Colonel.
Colonel.
Mm-hmm. And if they do the one called Back There with the professor from Gilligan's Island, he was in that one too.
That's about Lincoln, isn't it?
Uh-huh. About a guy who ends up going back in time and tries to stop Lincoln's assassination and how things changed. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway.
Cool.
Pretty cool.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Take care. Have a good evening. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
See you later.
Thank you for being a part of this podcast. This is an unofficial podcast dedicated to the ABC TV show Once Upon a Time. This is Wayne Henderson, the voice of the Once Upon a Time fan podcast. And if you want to know more about how my voice acting services might work for you, check out MediaVoiceOvers.com. And now, all of us here at Roni's Own Media and MediaVoiceOvers.com look forward to sharing the love and enjoyment of the Once Upon a Time TV show next time. Take care.